Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast, episode 217. Nothing witty for the intro this week. I don't got anything.
Yeah, 217, you know, again, those numbers are usually X-Men numbers to me.
But you had long since stopped reading X-Men at that point.
No, I think I got to do the 220s.
Oh, okay.
I was close. Close.
He was still deigning to read it at that point.
Yeah.
He's like, I will continue. Oh, wait a minute. I'm not feeling it.
You know what I think, actually, one of the big things for me, aside from, you know, seeing that Claremont was losing it a little bit, maybe even then, was that they didn't have as strong a grouping of like extended runs from artists, I think.
Yeah.
Like, there were still some good artists like Mark Silvestri and stuff like that in there. But you know, the relatively long run from John Byrne, from Paul Smith, from John Romita, kind of gave it a consistency.
Interesting. I actually, Silvestri stuck around. I stuck around with Silvestri quite a while.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite runs.
Rick Leonardi did some stuff in there. Mm-hmm. So, I like that.
They're both solid. It's solid.
All right. So, store news. There is still room in one of our D&D 101. We're doing these D&D 101 things. So, if you want to play D&D, you want to learn how to play, it's $10. Accounts, that's with tax. You come in, you get a dice bag with dice in it. You'll get a character, you'll have pencils, all that stuff you need. We have a DM, we'll run you like a 3-hour session.
Yep. And we've had a lot of interest, and I think it's going to be super fun.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, very, very much for the person who's like, "What's this D&D all about? It sounds cool."
So the Saturday session is full. We have a couple spots left in the Sunday, July 29th, and I'm pretty sure we're going to wind up doing more of them in August.
Yeah, no doubt.
And
I guess we should say, like, some of the people listening, they may have played D&D. If you've got that friend or relative who's been interested, this is a good way for them to get to know it.
Then we have our midnight release for Fantastic Four number 1 and all the Marvel comics. It's coming up on Tuesday, August 7th. We're hoping some other people will jump in. We don't know. But at the very least, we'll be selling Fantastic Four number 1, which is much anticipated since they've been off the scene for like 3 years now.
Yep.
All right. Let's get to the news, because there's a ton of news this week.
Do it.
And I've arranged it by category. So we're going to start with the comics news, which, by the way, next week, we have a flood of comics news.
I was going to say, isn't this weekend
San Diego? San Diego is starting
tomorrow
night is preview night.
Yeah.
So we will be starting to get a flood of news, and next week we will have a ton of comics news for us. But a couple things leaked out ahead of time. One is that G. Willow Wilson, the co-creator of Ms. Marvel, is going to be writing Wonder Woman along with Carrie Nord on art. That they're going to start with a story that is called The Just War. Steve Trevor goes missing in an Eastern European country in the midst of revolution. Wonder Woman flies in to help him, and Ares is involved.
It sounds kind of quintessential Wonder Woman.
Yep.
But this is the first time I've sort of been excited for a Wonder Woman in a while. I think G. Willow Wilson will bring an interesting flavor to it.
She freelance?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I wasn't sure. Like, she didn't jump ship from Marvel.
She's still doing this Marvel.
That's interesting. Yeah. I don't know where I stand on that. I haven't closely followed Ms. Marvel for a while. I liked it, but I don't know, maybe I didn't need no more teen comics. Get off my lawn, kids.
Ms. Marvel's one of my favorite books. It's actually the only thing G. Willow Wilson's written that I really liked, unfortunately, so I'm curious to see your take on Wonder Woman.
Anybody who is going to come in with a kind of a strong vision, and who I know, and I, at the very least I know she's got some chops and craft and all that stuff, because what I read was very good, is going to be worth checking out.
Let's not forget Carrie Nord on art. I mean,
he brought a
great pedigree to Conan, so I would imagine.
That was 15 years ago.
He's only improved.
But I do, the coloring they had on that, which was,
I forget. It wasn't Dave Stewart, was it?
I think it might have been Dave Stewart. And, like, I would love for him to kind of reunite with that. That was his style. It particularly suited his style.
Yeah.
But be that as may, super talented artist. I think it'll be a run worth looking at no matter what.
Yeah.
And then Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049 are going to get some graphic novels and comics, which is interesting news because I think that world's got a lot of room to explore.
Uh-huh.
It's from Titan Books, and unfortunately I think none of us are super into Titans books.
Right. I think, you know, they've done licensed stuff that ranging from, like, Warhammer to Doctor Who.
To the Forever War. Like, they're doing 70s sci-fi. They've got a line of crime books.
Yeah.
It's all pretty. It's
yeah,
all really
but well. I've yet to see, like, sort of a standout book from them. I've seen solid. I've seen some solid Warhammer stuff in there.
Were they the ones who did,
Doctor
like,
who?
The Durandal's Dreams of an Electric Sheep
adaptation?
No, that adaptation?
Was Boom. That was
Boom?
That was
okay.
Boom. They did that weird painted, had to have all the text from the novel in there.
Oh,
it was
right.
Weird.
Yeah. And this will definitely be, like, based on the movie-verse versions, which is interesting because no one's really done any expanded stuff on that. There's, like, I believe a single Blade Runner 2 novel, basically, that came out, like, a decade or two back that I heard was kind of crap.
Yeah. Well, maybe this is Titan's breakout book. Who knows?
Could be. I mean, you know, this would be one for them to, like, put their best of the best on because... If it was good, it could really put them on the map.
Yeah.
A good Blade Runner comic, any good Blade Runner expanded universe material would be huge. I think fans would clamor for it, but if it's mediocre...
I just want to throw out a possible crossover if it doesn't... You know, kind of fizzles a little bit? No. I want Blade Runner and Blade. Can we have that? don't know if that would actually mesh all that well, but I
some replicants always trying to ice skate uphill.
I want Blade Runner Aliens because it's clearly in the same universe. Like, the Blade Runner replicants, they definitely seem to be what leads to the...
Ridley Scott never wants that.
Yeah, but I want it.
He doesn't even want to do alien movies anymore.
They've got the Doctor Who license. I want the Doctor to go in and fix up the Blade Runner Dark Future.
I also, by the way...
Put a smile on that face, replicant.
Ridley Scott and I want the same thing, which is not for him to do any more Blade Runner or alien movies.
Yeah. Well, he's not doing these comics, so... Yeah.
Well, I mean, I need to watch Blade Runner 2049. I've heard
love Blade Runner 2049, but that is Denis Villeneuve. It is not Ridley Scott.
Didn't he have, like, some
involvement? He was one of the producers.
Yeah,
and that's fine. He could be a producer. Just don't direct anything anymore.
But he did The Martian. And
he's good in The Martian.
He occasionally can bring out the good.
That's true. But if you were buying a brand of ice cream, Nick, and 9 out of 10 times it tasted like toe jam, and the 10th time it tasted like delicious chocolate fudge, would you still buy that brand of ice cream?
No.
See? That's what I'm saying.
You know, I think his most track record is better than that.
Most of Ridley Scott's recent movies are toe jam.
I think he had his crappy Robin Hood movie and he had his Prometheus-y stuff. But I think the comparison doesn't work because it's like because at his best he's super good, and at his medium level he's very solid and good.
Prometheus is terrible.
Yeah, Prometheus was terrible.
And I didn't see that Alien. Was it Covenant? Or?
Alien Covenant was reported.
Who's the guy who wrote Prometheus? Well. That lost guy.
David Lindelof.
Yeah, man. That guy can bomb something.
Yeah, he
he's got a weird track record, though, because he's got some ups and downs, too.
Randy, how did you feel about the next Damon Lindelof project?
Well, his last project was Leftovers, which I loved. So his next project is Watchmen.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited for his next project.
Yeah? Even though Prometheus.
Really? Yeah.
Okay.
They can't all be winners.
He's only
had one toe jam ice cream, Dave.
It might have been Ridley Scott's involvement that killed Prometheus.
That's what I'm saying. I put the blame on Ridley, you put the blame on Lindelof.
Is it possible Ridley Scott is kind of like George Lucas? Like, he's very kind of overbearing in his movie making?
Well, I think he is, but
more talented.
But he's had more hits than Lucas has.
Well, yeah.
But I do think, you know, I mean, there's guys what's his name? Is it Martin Brest? Is that the guy who did?
Yeah, Martin Brest.
Yeah, he did that, like Beverly Hills Cop and what do you call it?
Midnight Run
to his name. Two great movies,
and
I think
Geely.
Everything else is kind of forgettable. And
Geely, which is really one of the worst bombs.
Notoriously terrible.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of those things where sometimes people are like they have certain projects that they're great for.
Yeah. Sure.
And a lot of times also returning to the well on any project for no matter who the creator is, if it was kind of conceived as a one shot and you kind of go back to expand on it. It honestly rarely works out well. I've you know, like franchises like Terminator and Aliens and all of those ones, I mostly wish those were like two-part movies.
So, for your edification, I would like to give you the last like 10 movies that Ridley Scott has directed.
Okay. Right.
Alien Covenant.
Okay.
Bad.
Didn't watch it.
The Martian. Good.
Okay. It's very good.
Exodus.
Great.
Exodus Gods and Kings.
Haven't seen.
It's supposed to be terrible.
Yeah.
The Counselor.
I'd watch it.
I don't even know what that is. Is that the one with Robert Duvall?
Maybe. I don't
think I've heard that stuff,
one.
Never seen it. Prometheus. Robin Hood.
Yep.
Body of Lies, which I don't even remember. And then American Gangster, which is not terrible.
Yeah, I thought American Gangster was great.
And then you go back a little further, and there's like Matchstick Men, Black Hawk Down, Hannibal. Hannibal's not great.
Yeah.
Gladiator, then G.I. Jane. I mean, You're right. In general, his record is pretty solid, even though he's definitely been falling off.
Well, I feel like his heyday was the 80s, you know?
But he had another good run in, like, the 90s and the 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, I like G.I. Jane for what it is, and Black Hawk Down, all those are, I mean...
I guess what I'm saying is, I'm being too harsh, I'm Ridley Scott, and I apologize.
Here, have a taste of this toe jam ice cream as your punishment.
Wait until he does
toe jam. You can really taste the jam.
Wait until he does Martian 2.
Martian was also set in the Prometheus universe. He finds one of those albino aliens.
NASA
on Mars.
Was actually funded by Weyland Yutani.
Yeah, Martian 2, back to Mars.
who's the droid or whatever that he's like super in love with? Who's that actor?
Oh,
Magneto. Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, Fassbender's back. He finds Fassbender on. He finds actual Michael Fassbender on Mars.
Matt Damon loved Mars so much he had to go back and get stranded there for a second time.
Oh, not again! I'm gonna make more potatoes. Anyway,
this time he's gonna make a potato gun to fight off the to fight off the albino aliens.
Turning to TV news, we have a full cast or a pretty full cast for Why the Last Man, the pilot that's in FX. The weird thing is, we had heard Jodie Foster, right?
Yeah.
And we don't know who she's playing.
Well, the rumor was she was his mom.
Well, she's not playing his mom. Okay. Is it possible she's going to be Colonel Alter? I feel like Colonel Alter has to be younger.
It's possible. Anything is possible.
Or she could be the head of the Amazons.
Yeah.
The two main leads are Diane Lane is playing Yorick's mother, the president.
Just great casting.
And Barry Keoghan, who is from Dunkirk and Killing of a Sacred Deer. I've seen the former, not seen the latter, but I know he's supposed to be great in it.
Yeah.
He is playing Yorick. And he looks young, but I can see him. He looks young, kind of douchey, so looks forced for Yorick.
That's exactly what Yorick is.
Yeah. I watched Dunkirk. Oh, that guy. Okay, yeah. No, that makes sense.
Imogen Poots, best name ever, is Yorick's tough-talking paramedic sister, Harrow. Lashana Lynch from Captain Marvel, who I'm pretty sure is playing Monica Rambeau. Playing Agent 355. Juliana Canfield from Succession is playing Beth, York's girlfriend, who's described in this as a Brooklyn-based knife maker, so it's not like maybe they're not going to do the walkabout in Australia thing.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, Leftovers already did the Australia has magical significance to the apocalypse thing, so I understand why they might steer clear of that.
Yeah.
And then Maren Ireland from Hell or High Water, who I don't remember, but I've loved Hell or High Water. She's going to play Nora, the president's senior assistant and right hand, who seems to be given a bit more focus in the adaptation. Michael Green, who was on American Gods, is going to serve as showrunner. Ada Mashaka Kroll of Luke Cage and Turn will be on board, and Melina Matsoukas of Insecure is directing the pilot. It's a lot of good talent.
That is a pretty long laundry list of good talent. So
I'm excited for this. I really want to see a good Why the Last Man adaptation.
It seems like it.
Well, FX is a great home for it.
Honestly, yeah. they could even, like, they can improve on the graphic novel potentially in some ways.
What? Right.
Everybody knows the ending stunk.
The ending's great.
I like the ending.
My big worry is...
You think people talk about it more? Yeah, like, I mean, you know, a lot of this 90s and early 2000s projects, like Sandman even, like, it has some interest, but it's never going to be what it was. You think it's just one of those?
I think a lot of people fell off of it and never got around to the ending. I mean, I know that was your case, right, Dave? You never read the ending?
Yeah, but I also kind of like... I think I soured a little bit on Brian Vaughn at the time.
Yeah, you did.
And
you
think it's Vaughn's strongest work.
I don't know if it's the strongest. I might... Well, I need to see how Saga ends. I think Saga in general is stronger, and I actually think I can make a case for Private Eye.
Mm.
But Y is really good. It's up there amongst...
Well, and also...
I think it's one of its most approachable ones.
And I really love the Pia Guerra artwork. And I know a lot of people...
Really I think they probably had to take a little bit of a break and put a distance between that and the movie Children of Men, which it bears a superficial similarity to, even though the premise is different.
Yeah. Sure.
And I think there's been enough time now, though, but they did have to, I think, backburner it a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And also, they were keep trying to do it as a movie, and that would have been terrible.
Yeah.
Like, it needs to be a show.
It needs that room to breathe.
Pia Guerra, as you're saying, Nick, was really, really good on the art, and I think J.G. Jones did the covers...
Correct.
He did. Yeah.
I feel like that. I'd be interested to see if he did like some promotional material.
Oh yeah.
Or Pia Guerra for that matter. Have you noticed she's been doing like political cartoons for like the New Yorker and a bunch of stuff? Yeah. It's just interesting because I kind of always expected she'd just be straight sequential. I didn't know that she would kind of find a second home there, which is cool.
Did anybody else see the Doctor Who teaser trailer that came out?
No, I watched it.
Okay.
I tried to, but I was like stuck in traffic somewhere, and my connection was no good. So
Dave was driving and watching trailers.
Yeah, that worries me.
Like, I tried to watch a trailer, but I almost got killed by a semi, and I had to stop.
It's more one of those things where, like, ain't nobody going nowhere for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a good trailer. I mean, it was kind of
like just the one that was like the kind of like in a cafe or something.
Yeah, it just
like
shows
that.
Stuff shaking. It shows a few people who are probably going to be involved in her life.
Yeah,
it looks like her companion is going to be a man.
Yep,
and. We just see her in the costume, which I kind of am already warming to.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm glad that this is not going to be what's his name show running it anymore.
Russell T. Davies, no.
Yeah, this is somebody Stephen else. Moffitt. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember who's running it either, but yeah, I'm excited to go back to Doctor Who. I've sort of fallen off with the Peter Capaldi stuff.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to checking this back.
Me too.
So yeah, that's coming in fall 2018. Then we saw that Joss Whedon has a new show coming up. He got there was a bidding war. He wound up on HBO.
Yeah, it was between like HBO and Netflix.
Netflix, who are definitely the two guys sort of fighting it out. Netflix edged out HBO and Emmy noms this year for the first time ever. So I'm sure HBO is not crazy about that because HBO lives and dies on its Emmy nod.
It's true.
So the series is described as an epic science fiction drama about a gang of Victorian women who find themselves with unusual abilities, relentless enemies, and a mission that might change the world. So steampunk X-Men.
Yeah.
So it is actually set in the Victorian era?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought it was like a far-flung future sort of thing.
I'm sure it'll get there.
Well, right. It says science fiction, but I assume that meant it's kind of steampunk.
Yeah, that would make sense, actually. What did it say? A team of...
Science fiction drama about a gang of Victorian women who find themselves with unusual abilities, relentless enemies, and a mission that might change the world.
Interesting.
I think a Victorian-era X-Men is a pretty good descriptor.
Yeah. If that's what it is, I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, Whedon's always a competent,
creator. He has such a contemporary sort of voice. I wonder what his sound for Victorian will be like. Are they still going to be snarky?
I bet they'll still be snarky.
Yeah, they'll definitely.
But are they
going
to be snarky in a modern style? Will it be like stylized, or will they be meant to sound Victorian-ish?
I think they'll adapt.
Like, is it going to be Jane Austen with a little snark in there? Actually,
I think it'll be snarky Jane Austen.
Yeah,
I think it'll be quite snarky. Here's the thing, Whedon. They credit him in the articles as like co-creator of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the last thing he did, but let's be honest.
That's his
all
brother.
He did was let his brother and their production company do it like that. He lent his name to it.
The last
he
thing
had
he,
nothing to do with
the
it.
The last thing he did was Dollhouse.
Last thing was Dollhouse, 2009. And then here's the thing. Everything he's done has been on Fox or the WB.
Yeah.
He's never had like a big budget thing like HBO.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to see what his world building can do with it with money behind it.
Yeah.
Well, he did do a big budget movie once.
Yeah,
that worked out
twice,
all right.
Actually,
speaking of course of Avengers.
Yeah.
But
this is getting him back on the small screen.
Yeah,
and I honestly think he works better
and
there.
And that's different than Prestige TV. Movies are one thing. Prestige TV is quite another.
Yeah, I would be curious to see. I feel like he could acclimate pretty decently to that. And like having done big budget movie now, he certainly seemed like the far end. The every single a bunch of hands or a bunch of cooks in the kitchen and all that. There is something I've noticed sometimes, somewhat among friends and kind of out in the internet culture. Joss Whedon kind of fell from grace because it turns out he might have been a creepy husband and maybe serial cheater in a particularly kind of maybe manipulative way.
Yeah.
And but as part of the narrative against that, and that did sound bad. I don't know all the details of it, but I'm like, he sounds like he might have been a scumbaggy guy. I don't know. We'll find out more. The narrative that kind of also emerged was, Joss Whedon was never that good.
I've definitely seen that.
I also already have some friends. Like, I have friends who always felt that way.
a lot of my feminist friends have no use for Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
They don't like his brand of feminism.
Right.
They think that his...
Well, I for sure consider myself a feminist, and I, like, love Whedon, but at the same time, I can look back at stuff and see, like, oh, yeah, that's problematic, or, like, I can see, like, oh, yeah, that skeevy side of him, I see that peeking out there.
I can see it, too, but I also can't deny that I always enjoyed Dollhouse, Firefly, and Buffy, and Angel.
Yep.
So, I feel like, basically, this is kind of where I'm in a lot of things. It's like, I don't begrudge anyone who says, like, fuck Whedon forever, I can't use...
Right,
this
point.
That's totally a legit position to take. But I don't feel like I have to hold that position.
Right.
It's not like he's Harvey Weinstein. It's not like,
Right.
It's a thing where I can still enjoy his art, even if he's a flawed
person. Yeah, me too.
And he is a competent storyteller that
beyond competent.
He's very good at what he does.
He's created worlds that I would still love to revisit the Serenity world in some capacity. It doesn't have to be with Mal.
There's gonna be some novels. But you were running, Nick, Buffy and Angel at various times in the last few weeks. A lot of people commenting on it, mostly fondly. I never got around to seeing Buffy or whatever. But almost everybody was like, oh, I love Buffy. Oh, this is a great episode of Angel, you know. Yeah. And I think Firefly is the one that's probably in the most hearts, in geekdom. Although Buffy was probably more transformative overall. In fact, almost certainly was.
Right.
I need to revisit Dollhouse at some point.
But, I want this to be good.
Me too.
I do too.
Me too.
We talked about there's not... steampunk is a popular concept that doesn't have much percolating in comics outside of Lady Mechanica, which I'm not really into.
Right.
Honestly, they haven't done too much with it with movies, have they?
Not a ton.
Other than, the occasional weirdo thing, way back in the day, their version of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen
Peter Jackson dueling...
That's future. Still futuristic, though.
It had
some
steampunk elements.
I mean, yeah, it was but it was futuristic, civilization collapses and steam arises again. Not like Victorian steampunk,
right.
though.
Yeah. No. And this should feel right at home at HBO. It kind of fits that sci-fi with Westworld.
Yeah.
And honestly, HBO doesn't have a lot of misses.
Yeah.
I wonder what the casting will be like on this one.
They'll get big names.
Yeah. They'll definitely get some interesting people involved.
Yeah.
So, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Netflix unveiled their first look at Noelle Stevenson's She-Ra.
Oh, yeah.
And the designs look fit. It's definitely in that sort of Adventure Time mode a little bit.
Right. They're, not quite the quasi-realism of the... was that Filmation?
Yeah,
that did that back in the 80s?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, He-Man and She-Ra both had pretty terrible animation that was, you might have liked the overall basic designs, which is... But the animation was pretty bad, and they did that thing where they reused a lot of animation running.
This was too Adventure Time-ish. It felt kind of Lumberjanes meets Steven Universe.
I was going to say, Steven Universe. What you meant.
Adventure Time is a little...
It looked like the color palette of Steven Universe, and some of the character designs
Sort of the rounded face type stuff.
Yes.
But like you say, Noelle Stevenson did that. She did that with Nimona, her graphic novel. She did that with Lumberjanes. And... I think the designs look amazing.
Yeah,
I think so too.
I didn't have any interest in She-Ra because I have no.
Well, you know what I kind of want is for this to be successful and to lead into then He-Man, which will have a rethought kind of aesthetic.
That'd be interesting too.
And a new way to lens those characters.
Well,
and I say that after there's a very fun He-Man project in comics this very week, which we'll talk about later.
So I have no fondness for the He-Man She-Ra universe. I don't think I ever saw an episode of She-Ra, but. Netflix has done Voltron, which I also had no real fondness for, and has done an amazing job with it. And so I'm really interested to see what they do with this.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to hear, voice casting and things like that, just to see what they go, because the voice casting on
Voltron...
It'll
be exciting to see the first clip from it.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of fascinated by the way things sometimes occur nowadays, where the Arrow TV show paves the way for the entire DC TV universe.
Yeah.
It would be fascinating if She-Ra emerged as the first one and led into He-Man, and... For all I know, something else, you know?
You can get the Cringer miniseries you never knew you wanted to.
The animated thing they saw a trailer for Marvel Rising Initiation.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I liked it.
Which is, Squirrel Girl, Ms. Marvel, Ghost Spider, which is the name we're giving Spider-Gwen, which, by the way, is a good code name.
I like that name. Yeah.
And
it's warming on me.
I think it's perfect because the hood and the predominance of white on the costume make Ghost a cool name to go with it.
And Patriot, the new Patriot, and Quake being redone by Chloe Bennett from the Shield.
I didn't get a chance to watch this one. Is it skewing more towards comedy?
It's funny. It's got great animation.
A little bit like the Miles Morales thing that there's going to be adventure in it, but it's good. There was some shots where they showed Squirrel Girl or something doing some cool gymnastic-y type move, and it was meant to look cool, not just.
It's not goofy or something like that.
She is a comedic personality, and this is almost a putting the band together kind of trailer where it's her and Ms. Marvel primarily meeting. There's a false accusation for
Ghost Spider, so they have to go after
her.
Yeah.
And then there's eventually you see they clearly are meeting, and they're we need to track down whoever really did this, and they kind of put the team together.
I remember early on when they announced the voice cast, it was very good.
Yeah, they show the voice cast with the pictures of the people, and they all look good.
Yeah.
Okay. And Carol Danvers is in here, one of them too,
is
right?
Not, that, we don't see her.
Oh, okay.
One of them is that chick, Dove Cameron?
Yes.
Who is that who is Dagger in Cloak and Dagger?
It might be.
I feel like...
possible.
That's what I was thinking it was. I'm just wondering if she's, like, doing, like, all the Marvel things now.
Oh, that's interesting. All I know is that these are characters I really like being done in a really good-looking animation series. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for this.
I'm excited, yeah. I like the idea of, like, these characters kind of becoming the face of Marvel for younger viewers and, like, the way that they enter into it.
And I assume this is going to be on Disney XD?
Disney XD starting August 13th.
Okay.
I especially liked the vibe I was picking up off of Squirrel Girl.
Yeah. Well, they do sort of the fun, like, Marvel team-up stuff. Like, her and Miss Marvel, like, getting together. It's some fun stuff.
Yep. And I saw squirrels. Many squirrels.
Well, she should have her tippy-toe.
Oh, the other thing that I was happy to see is that Gwen has her band.
Oh, yeah. They did. They showed her like practicing. You know,
isn't their band the Mary Janes?
Yeah, and her like buddies come in, and she's looking exhausted. And she's like, "Why are you so exhausted?" She's like, "Oh, I had a SWAT team chase me for 6 blocks."
Yeah,
and they're like, "Ah, you're so funny."
Right.
It was a good little bit. Nathan Fillion is in an Uncharted fan film.
Yeah, I think I am the only one who watched this out of the three of us.
I actually really meant to because I wanted to, and I like the idea of him kind of embracing what was, like, longtime fan casting.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've wanted Nathan Fillion to do Nathan Drake forever. And honestly, I was kind of like, is he too old to do it?
Right.
And he's kind you know...
I feel like he'd be playing him in a slightly different manner in which... I say this, I know it exists already, so I can find out the answer to this. But I feel like he'd be playing him in a little bit different way, a little Fillion style from the...
He doesn't. He plays straight Nathan Drake. He actually does all the action, all the stunt. It looks like he does all the stunts. He's in fantastic shape. And I guess he's doing that for his new CBS show.
I'm trying to think. Although Nathan Drake is a very physical action hero in the Uncharted series, isn't he usually wearing a jacket or something? Like, you don't see it. Like,
he's wearing, like, a blue shirt and, like, his holster and...
Okay.
But not only that, this fan film is definitely on a lower budget, so it's really just takes place in like a palatial estate and with him talking with some goons trying to find a map to buried treasure.
Yeah.
It feels very much in line with what all the Uncharted games are about. And then they got why am I blanking on his name for Sully, the guy from Avatar.
Stephen Lang.
Stephen Lang as Sully, who is fantastic.
Really? Wait, the guy who was the heavy in Avatar? The sergeant or whatever?
Yeah, the sergeant. He plays Sully.
It's hard for me to picture him as anything but that, because I think that's the only thing I've seen him in. And Sully is more of like... I almost think of him the way, like, Powers Booth would be was in his older years. He's kind of, like, a little more slow and drawly,
He adapts the sort of voice cadence. Let's see, Sully
is very... Getting him right is a key thing.
Yeah, and they have a great repertoire. His girlfriend is in there as well, and she's played by somebody else who's notable.
Okay.
Honestly, for it being just a fan film... they did everything right, and I kind of was...
Is it a proof of concept? For him to do it feels like, you know, those are pretty big names to get.
It's either a proof of concept, and Fillion wants to do this, and this is the whole
reason. Just see how
he
generates, how much, you know, what kind of attention can we put on.
I don't know. It's fantastic. I think people should watch it and make it, and kind of spread it around and get it into more people's hands, so maybe this can be a thing that happens.
The problem, then, of course, it runs into is that all video game movies suck. could this ever be the exception? You know, could you get a writer of some skill and wit, which I think is really the key above anything else, is getting a fun script.
There's got to be a first one. There has to be a first video game movie that's successful.
Yeah.
And if Uncharted, which blends the greatness of Indiana Jones with the...
almost like a Joss Whedon touch.
Yeah, with the Joss Whedon touch and some supernatural stuff, because it always goes there.
Yeah.
I think it'd be
right.
It'd
be
perfect.
Sully have like one of the best bromances in video games, and like if I would lean on that for the story, I actually love the girlfriend whose name escapes me.
If they were smart, they would just hire the Naughty Dog writers who were writing for the game to do the script.
I know you mean the video game company Naughty Dog.
Yes.
But in my head, I just picture a pair of Naughty Dog writers.
Yes.
I like it.
By the way, I feel like somebody out there is like, Mortal Kombat is good. Yes, Mortal Kombat is a good, fun movie. It's kind of a good, in some ways, a good, bad movie.
Yes. It's a good, bad movie.
But
with a great soundtrack.
We do acknowledge it.
We acknowledge Mortal Kombat, but it is not the template on which all video game movies should be based.
Right. If we really want the genre to kind of find a hold, it's got to be better than Mortal Kombat.
There just has not been a good video game movie. No. I can't.
They've tried. You can find good moments. You can find good actors in these movies.
Yep. Yeah.
But it just has not happened.
No.
Yeah. All right. So, Lord and Miller, who have done a bunch of stuff.
At this point, it seems like their resume is endless.
They're adapting Artemis from Andy Weir, which is the novel he did after The Martian.
Yep.
Nick's read it, right?
Yeah, I did get a chance to read it.
And Captain Marvel screenwriter Geneva Robertson-Dwarrett is doing the script.
Yeah.
We don't know if that's good because we haven't seen Captain Marvel yet, but anyone working with Marvel has kind of... gets my basic attention.
And it's a fun idea for sort of a colony on the moon, and there's a heist element to it. So,
okay.
I mean, it's tailor-made. I think you, Randy, would really enjoy the movie.
I need to find time to read. I haven't finished the Elmore Leonard's book.
Tell me what the basic premise is.
It's a, like I said, just a colony on the moon, and then there's a girl there who is a black market dealer. She basically gets contraband from Earth to the colony.
Okay.
And gets wrapped up in like a murder mystery.
Okay. I like the premise.
Yeah, it's a fun premise. Andy Weir,
I assume some of the same realism.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely does kind of that hyper future realism in some ways, like Tom Clancy does.
Right, like you might actually feel like hopefully you would, reading this, feel like what it might be like to be on a lunar colony.
Yeah.
How far flung? Do you happen to remember, like 50 years, 100 years?
I don't remember off the top, but in that ballpark, I would imagine.
I feel like he's not a guy who does 500 years from now.
I mean, if you read The Martian,
it was only a couple years in the future.
And he has some tics. I mean, like any writer, he kind of transfers over some of those.
I was mildly disappointed in The Martian as a book.
There were not enough Martians in
this. Partially based on the hype for it, but also I thought his writing skill was not quite there, that his ideas were great, but I for sure liked the movie better.
Well, I mean, it was his first book, and as a sophomore outing, it was, I think, a little bit better written than The Martian, but his sort of sarcastic main character is still there.
Right.
Just transferred.
I felt like his sarcasm somewhat had one speed in The Martian, and maybe that's just him. But now that you mention it, I think I might fast track it and try and read the book.
But I love the concepts he comes up with, and the world building that he does.
Well, you know, a little somewhat harder sci-fi, even if it's got something of a genre hook, which is like survivalist stuff in The Martian, crime story in this one. I want that to be around. I don't want every sci-fi piece to be, you know, Tom Cruise laser guns.
Right. It doesn't have to be.
Or space opera. I'd like something that actually feels a little bit more realistic. Maybe even a, what do you call it? What was it? Upgrade that came out this year actually slightly falls into that. It's a little more thought-provoking than you might expect for it. But I guess ultimately more of an action movie. Anyway, it sounds interesting.
Zombieland 2 begins filming in January 2018 with the original cast.
This has been long talked about.
That is, I did not think there was any way they were doing more Zombieland.
Yeah.
So I think I've maybe only seen it twice. And
that's a lot for you.
Yeah, that's a lot for me. But it's had what, I don't know, 10 plus years since it came out?
Yeah.
More than that, 15 maybe? I feel like I like Zombieland, but don't love it. Like, I felt like that, like the humor, like not quite enough humor landed for me to love it.
I feel like it's been a couple of years.
And I like all those characters and everything.
I think I need to revisit it. But the notion that Woody Harrelson is coming back and Emma Stone and
Michael Cera.
No, not Michael Cera.
The other
Lex Luthor.
Yeah,
Jesse Eisenberg.
And Hit Girl, which I can't remember her name.
No, it's not her. It's Abigail Breslin.
Oh, it's Abigail Breslin, not Chloe Moritz. Right. Sorry.
What else has she been in?
A bunch of stuff.
Okay.
Wasn't she in Little Miss Sunshine?
Yeah, she's been in.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out if the that girl from True Grit, did she become something?
No, that is she's in the Pitch Perfect movies.
Okay, yes. Is she?
Yeah.
She's great in them, too.
She was like, I thought she was amazing in True Grit, but I wasn't aware of what she did afterwards. Okay, but anyway, yeah, getting the cast back. I mean, it's really about hanging out with those characters.
Yeah, I actually love Zombieland, and I've watched it numerous times. It was originally supposed to be a TV show.
Yeah, and
they did that pilot for Amazon. It was terrible.
Yeah, I didn't ever get to see it, but I've heard it.
Was it leaked or did it actually?
No, it actually aired, and they didn't make any more. Because it was terrible.
Was that part of their pilot program where they were doing The Tick?
And nobody voted for that because that was well before The Tick. It was early on.
Oh, okay.
It was one of the first batches. At any rate, I'm excited for Zombieland 2. I don't know if it's actually going to happen or if they just say they're getting them all together, but it sounds like it's on track.
Yeah, it does.
Less excited for Neil Blomkamp to direct RoboCop Returns. First of all, I don't need RoboCop back. Second of all, Neil Blomkamp makes terrible movies. I said it.
So as someone who did not love his probably best known project, District 9,
yep.
I couldn't call it terrible.
No, District 9 is passable.
Yeah.
I might even say it's more ambitious. You know who he reminds me of?
Who's that?
The average guy's slightly ambitious guy, sci-fi guy of the 80s. I'm gonna blank on his name, but he made Alien Nation. And he also made... he did some new Twilight Zone episodes. He made Farscape. What the hell is that guy's name?
Oh, Rodney S. O'Bannon?
Yeah. I feel like Neil Blomkamp is the new Rodney S. O'Bannon.
What else? Maybe, but he thinks he's the next Ridley Scott.
What else has Blomkamp done?
Okay, so after Elysium? After he did that, he did Elysium, which was terrible. And then he did Chappie, which I heard not good things about.
Yeah.
And then he did...
What was his most recent one? Because there was something.
Did he do Alien? He did something else.
Well, he was going to be doing... He was supposed to do an Alien, the movie that would be like... I think
wasn't
just...
Wasn't he supposed to do Prometheus until... No.
I think he was going to do what would have been like a hypothetical alternate Alien 3 or something like that.
And then it got killed by
Prometheus. It got killed. Basically, it was like, because he had a script or something for it, and I think there was talk of resurrecting it because his star was on the rise. Because
I thought he had one more that people consider to be like his hit, but I guess...
You know what's interesting? I've got an acquaintance on Facebook who's solid taste in movies, not always exactly mine, but solid enough. And he was saying, I mean, he's overall a fan of Neil Blomkamp, or however you say his name. Yeah. And he said that he thought even Chappie was underrated, like that people kind of went into it looking to wreck it. And I'm curious at least now to see it. I kind of want to see what the deal is.
That was the Hugh Jackman thing, right?
Was Hugh Jackman in it? I forget who it was. I just knew it was another sad robot. Like, I don't want to be human or not be human.
Didn't it have Hugh Jackman in it?
I have no idea who was in Chappie.
I feel like it was.
But anyway...
The thing about this article from Deadline Hollywood is that it was a spec script by Ed Neumeier and Michael Miner... Who are producing and executive producing, and Justin Rhodes, who co-wrote the Terminator film that Tim Miller is shooting, is rewriting the script. But this was written as a planned sequel to RoboCop originally. Hmm. And in this article, they talk a lot about they connected to it. The consumerism, the materialism, the Reaganomics, all that stuff was interesting. But as he got older, they get connected with the identity and the search for identity and the human component and that kind of thing. And they're talking about sort of like the you know, what makes you human and that kind of thing.
Yep.
And that's interesting. I think
those aren't dissimilar to what he's already done, though.
Right. If I didn't like care about was it Alex Murphy RoboCop, if Peter Weller hadn't brought that to him, and if Paul Verhoeven and whoever the scriptwriter was, I don't know if Verhoeven wrote it, had not like worked on that, you know, the movie wasn't just carried by satire, you know, it did have like a sort of a heart beneath its bloody dark sense of humor.
You didn't have that charismatic bad guy.
Oh man.
Well, I also think Frank Miller was the wrong guy to do it because Frank Miller doesn't do subtle, and RoboCop was not like super subtle, but it needed a little bit of that.
Right. It was, I think, our first real glimpse of Frank off the rails.
Yeah.
Which would go on to become his central speed later on.
Yeah. I just don't think we need to waste...
Yeah, no, RoboCop is a fantastic movie. It's actually a great sort of, like, a skewed version of the 80s. Yeah. Like, it fits with the era. And I understand, you know, how you know, the draw to revisit licenses. You know, I'm not gonna die if another crappy RoboCop movie comes out. Yeah, the original will still be around, but I do think guy that is unlikely to come through in a really notable way, and it will somewhat sap away from the power of the original. With its awesome stop motion animated Ed 209s gunning guys to pieces for like 5 minutes. You know, you can't beat that. You can't beat Clarence Boddicker. A score by he works with Verhoeven on Starship Troopers 2.
Oh,
Basil Polidorus. Polidorus, yeah.
Famous Conan theme.
Yep. So that's not an easy thing to try and beat. Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff in that.
Yep.
And Peter Weller and Nancy Allen, they were all doing a great work in it, actually. So, yep. We'll see. All
right. Last bit of TV news here. Quantum of Woody is being done for TBS. It's being produced by Joe Anthony Russo and Mike LaCocca, who did Spy. And then Andrew Burr and Gabriel Ferrari, who did Ant-Man and the Wasp, are penning the pilot. It's a lot of talent.
TBS has not had a hit, as far as I know.
No. I am skeptical, but that's a lot of talent on board a property I really like.
Yeah,
fun idea. Would you say what is most of the humor in Quantum and Woody derived from? Is it because they're awkward brothers? Is it sort of because the mixed race thing?
It's the awkward brothers. The mixed race thing was heavier in Priest Run.
Yeah.
It's not as big of a thing now, and it's definitely the that one of them like wants to use these powers to become a superhero, and the other one is just kind of a slacker.
I mean, that is like Taylor written for a show.
Yeah,
I mean, you could make a great one. I don't know if TBS is the home for it.
I don't either. We'll see.
But like, I guess
it could work.
I guess the Russo brothers are just like picking their favorite comics right now because Deadly Class they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how involved they are, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Last little bits of news comes from the DC universe, DC movie universe. Jimon Hunsu is playing the wizard in Shazam.
Yeah.
Which is a different take from the white
character. I like it.
I love
it. Basically, it used to be like Moses.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Looked like Moses.
Yep.
Jimon Hunsu can have a white beard.
Jimon Hunsu.
It's true.
I feel like I've seen him with a white beard and something.
Possible.
That's possible.
Anyway. I'm down. Sounds great.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
We got new teaser pictures for Shazam and Aquaman, both of which look pretty good.
Yep. That made it sound like there was a movie called Shazam and Aquaman. I'm like,
I'd see that.
It could be.
If all goes well, I'm sure it's on DC's docket somewhere.
Shazam, the new cover of
Entertainment Weekly
has him with like blowing a bubble. It looks fun.
I was skeptical of Zachary Levi's Shazam, but
maybe the Shazam we need.
I think he might be the Shazam we need.
they showed something interesting that was pointed out to me. One of the interior shots, the one that made the rounds like a week or so ago, shows what him and Freddie Freeman, I guess, who will go on to become Captain Marvel Jr. at some point if they follow that. But him walking out of like a store with Shazam, and they're like carrying like they both are like kicking back with like a bottle of soda, and I think Shazam is carrying a big like 12-pack or whatever of it, which I believe in the Geoff Johns comic that took that iconography from, drawn by Gary Frank. They were sneaking out beer. And like was this kind of like. This kind of, I don't know, like slightly gritty edge that Johns gave to it that I hope that they don't do, and it seems like they're not.
No, I think that the soda is much more like, it's like the thing in Big, where they eat too much candy and they eat too much snacks and all that stuff. They don't go and get beer and a hooker.
Right. Honestly. I have a strong sense, by the way, that if they were to try that, they would immediately spit it out and be like, beer tastes disgusting. Why do people drink this?
Yeah.
Let's get a Coke.
Honestly, I feel like the building blocks for Shazam movie is Big.
Yeah, I agree.
I think and Big is a great...
That's what it looks like. It's basically like he is an adult. He went in. He got them a 12-pack of soda. And they're going to drink as much soda as they want
because
no grown-up can tell them what to do.
Yeah. Levi looks great. The costume looks great.
Yep.
Can we have Talkie Tawny?
I would love Talkie Tawny, and I could see it. I mean, it fits with the tone they're doing. It seems possible.
The full CGI one where he like kind of looks real.
And we're getting Mark Strong as Savannah. So,
is Black Adam in it?
No,
we don't know yet.
Right? Well, he might be a tail end or somewhere in there.
They were long, you know, The Rock was supposed to do that and like it didn't happen or whatever.
Yeah. I think he's still attached.
But if they did a teaser and
if
it had
the tail end,
if they did a teaser and it had The Rock in it, people would go through the roof.
Yeah. And that may be why they've taken him off publicly.
Right. It'd be huge if they did it.
But Mark Strong is going to eat the scene with...
Mark Strong is not the guy I would imagine as Savannah. Savannah's supposed to be a twerpy little guy. He's not supposed to look like a strong guy.
Mark Strong is not...
No, but he's got that British hooligan thing going.
If you imagine him in the Kingsman, he was not like svelte or anything. He was just kind of there.
Know. He'll be fine. I want a little more Weasley looking for my Savannah.
You know what's interesting is that Captain Marvel has like a weird loadout of, you know, kind of Golden Age type weird villains, yeah, Captain Nazi and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like Savannah, Black Adam, Mr. Mind. Done right, either kind of slightly goofier or kind of slightly edgier, a little bit more like credible threats.
Also the
I think both
man.
Could work. Yeah, like he has a fun pantheon. I'd like to see it done well.
Also, Captain Nazi is timely again.
Yes, he could be summoned indeed by the spirit of the modern
times. Can we see Zachary Levi punch out a Nazi? That would be fantastic.
Captain Marvel, it's funny because, you know, that was like all the heroes of the around in the 40s punched Nazis.
Yeah.
But Captain Marvel did it too. He might be the one who gets to break that ground.
And finally, this is the last bit of news. Joaquin Phoenix has been signed on to play the Joker in an origin movie. Now you're saying, wait, I thought they were doing Jared Leto Joker movie. We don't know. DC doesn't know. I don't believe any of this is happening.
I actually believe they're both happening, and we're going to get two Joker movies.
Oh my
God. So bizarre.
You know, there's three Jokers in the comics now or whatever. I bet they will not do two different Joker movies. They will not do two competing ones, I think. But whatever comes about, Joaquin Phoenix is a damn good actor.
He is.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us maybe want to see a Joker movie that's like about like crazy skeevy Joker.
I also don't want to see an origin Joker movie.
No, that's what it's going to be. It's the origin movie.
What I was going to say is like I could see a movie that had a very heavy presence from him. That's also a sort of like a stealth Gotham Central movie, like mostly from the perspective of the cops and how scary he would be to them and all that stuff.
No, this is an origin movie.
But, I mean, you could even still have that, his origin as he, like, begins to take root in the city and how the cops deal with him. I assume it won't be just, like, him 24/7, but maybe it will.
Oh, here's what I'm saying. If we're going to do three Jokers, Joaquin Phoenix is one of them, and Jared Leto is the other one,
mm-hmm.
I think the Peter obvious Dinklage. One is Shia LaBeouf. Shia LaBeouf as the third Joker.
Sure, he seems like a crazy person, little bit like Jared Leto.
Yeah.
So yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right.
I can get behind it.
We'll be back in just a minute to talk about comics of the week.
One familiar cry.
Rogue Cast. We're talking comics of the week of Wednesday, July 18th, and I actually thought this was a lighter week. I thought maybe it wasn't as good, and then I had a ton of good comics this week.
Yeah.
It's a fun one.
It is. There's some good stuff. So, Nick, why don't you start us off?
Mine's going to be pretty quick because I'm going to start sounding like a broken record because I pick Batman every time it comes out.
You're like Dave and whatever things Dave picks.
Kill or Be Killed?
You would think Royal City this week, but actually Royal City got slightly trounced by like more pop properties for
That's
me.
Interesting.
But
it's true.
Royal City, Kill or Be Killed, those are my standards.
And Batman is my standard at this point. Yeah. I think I've picked a lot of the 51 issues that they've put out.
But it's really not so much Batman as your standard as Tom King.
Yeah, more so.
Because like if it was what do you call it?
Mr. Miracle?
Mr. Miracle, that would be probably. Your pick as well, probably.
But this one is an interesting story. Not to forgo Tom King for a moment, I'm going to give
the first
Lee...
post-wedding issue.
Yeah, but I'm going to give Lee Weeks a shout-out here because this is him doing his first, I think, multiple-part story for Batman. He's done some one-shots and annuals. Like the Elmer Fudd.
I feel like he must have done some multi-part things in there somewhere, but it's true, I can't quite think of one.
Not with Tom King that I know of.
No, for sure not with Tom King.
But this is him. The story is basically Bruce Wayne is selected for jury duty. They're trying a case against Victor Freeze for the murder of three women. It's not told as kind of plain as day as that, as you would expect.
Tom King doesn't do that.
No. This is post-wedding, so it's Bruce Wayne dealing with the ramifications of that.
He's not in the best state of mind.
No, he's not in the best state of minds. And if you're in that kind of mindset, do you really want to be on a jury?
They do show the what do they call the process? Sequestering? Yep. Or what is that, when you get answer questions and stuff like that?
It's not sequestering. Sequestering is when you're like...
Oh, that's when they take you aside and...
Yeah, you're basically not allowed... Paneling.
Yeah.
Sequestering is when you're not allowed to leave.
Including such weird things as them asking him... Bruce Wayne, how do you feel about Batman?
Right. So there's some humor there. Lee Weeks' art, though, is stunning. I mean, he makes sort of the mundane courtroom feel insanely action-packed.
Right.
And it's all sort of interstitialed with Batman actually fighting Mr. Freeze.
Right. There's...
And... Oh, there's also...
The mystery of, like, the three women killed, it wasn't just, like, they were found in blocks of ice and they're dead.
Yeah,
there's something weird about it. I don't want to, like, spoil what it is, but there's something unusual about it, which means that there is some potentially legitimate doubt that Mr. Freeze did it.
And there's also a great scene with Commissioner Gordon and Dick Grayson as Batman on the rooftop where the bat signal is talking. And if you liked Dick Grayson as Batman in, say, like, Scott Snyder's Black Mirror... Is it Black Mirror?
Yep.
Isn't that what... Or during Grant Morrison's run. Dick Grayson is a great Batman. He's much more upbeat, and Tom King captures that completely. But it's a great issue. I really don't have much more to say than you should all read it.
So what I'm getting is Nick champions Batman in jury duty.
Yes, that's very true. Dave, what is your pick?
My pick is a baby comic for children.
Wow!
That I actually super enjoyed. Tim Seeley, who we've liked on books like Hack Slash,
yeah,
and what was his
Grayson.
He's doing a miniseries for DC that is a crossover between the Injustice Dark Future comic, you know, based on the video game, and Masters of the Universe, a.k.a. He-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So this is called Injustice versus Masters of the Universe.
We also know from talking with Tim years ago that he loves He-Man.
Yep. Did you see, Nick, that he actually threw... His pitch is in there.
Oh, is it? I did not see that.
He-Man at some point says... like, it's clear that this is sort of... He's doing an evolved version of it. But at one point, He-Man says something... Or Prince Adam says... Like, because he's lost his identity, that is to say, he used to have a secret identity as Prince Adam, they make clear, but in a previous crossover, like with Thundercats or something, it got open to the public.
Okay.
And he says, he's like, I used to think He-Man was this, you know, mountain man hero who came down whenever civilization needed some help.
That was Tim's pitch.
And that was kind of part of his pitch, and he's like, things have changed and I've had to evolve or whatever. Like, only we would know that is actually kind of a weirdly meta statement.
That's awesome.
But it is in there. Anyway, what works about this is that it is very carefully thought through and has fun characterization, and I felt like there was, like, some neat scene or another on almost every other page, you know?
Has his mom always been from Earth?
Not that I know of.
That was a neat little touch, too.
I feel like that came out somewhere. So, yeah, that is Prince Adam's mother is talking about, like, back in the days when she would, like...
She was at Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale, yeah, during spring break. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's weird. It almost makes it sound like there's some backstory that I'm actually sort of interested in now.
Yeah, me too.
Where she and, I don't know if her husband, or she, like, came from Earth, met, the guy who would become King...
She met the King.
King Randor on Eternia, and they hooked up. And all that. This begins on a strong foot for me with the obscure He-Man guy Zodak, which was one of the first He-Man figures I had back in the day. He's got a cool costume.
They're definitely doing a Metron riff with
him. Yeah, they kind of have him as kind of the and indeed he intersects with another one of the new gods later on. Yeah. But he's kind of doing the observer, and he gets you your early exposition as to kind of what's going on.
Dave and I had a small conversation as we flipped and saw that he was on the front page, and he was like, I don't want Zodak just to be on his little Metron thing. He's big and beefy and attack, and I'm like, everyone in the He-Man universe is
big. Everybody looks like that.
Yeah, that's true. It's like, it's as if everybody, like, when they could be, like, having a council meeting, and everybody would be, like, pumping iron during it.
They open and close every council meeting with, how many reps is that?
Yeah. They're just like doing push-ups and stuff like that while they converse. For the record, this does not happen in the book, but that is what He-Man is like.
Yeah.
Oh, and I do want to mention real quick the artist Freddie Williams. Isn't this the guy who did like Batman Ninja Turtles?
Yes.
And he's fun for this kind of property. Yep. He draws big beefy characters, good action. It's got that kind of cool painted look.
And they feel iconic. I mean, these are the He-Man characters that are instantly recognizable.
Here's an interesting way that they're lensed. Everybody know, people might remember, there's a cheesy He-Man villain named Faker. He's got blue skin and I guess was like sort of like the same way Zartan would change forms in G.I. Joe. This guy did that for He-Man.
He was the
and
Zartan
when He-Man's fighting with him in the beginning, he's like kind of bitterly angry. He's like, 3 months, Faker, 3 months gone because you thought you could steal my life. And I was like, oh, that's actually kind of a cool idea. He made it personal, like takes this character who just imitates other people.
Yep.
And he made it personal where He-Man has like been, you know, in prison for this time. And, you kind of get the in media res opening where, you know, this is all happening. Orko and some of these other characters are breaking out. And Mossman, who's cool in here.
Mossman and Swamp Thing crossover. That was cool.
They both, like, communicate through the green. And, like, it's like Mossman is the one who's able to verify that when some of the DC heroes show up in the universe, they're, like, they're telling the truth. There are no lies in the green. And I was like, oh, man, that's, like, clever ideas. Orko, I actually kind of liked his personality. He's kind of like a weird little imp dude, but not the I was only trying to help little Batmite jerk face that he was on the cartoon.
Yep.
And there's a bunch of clever little bits in here.
I didn't get a chance to read this one, but does it feel sort of like the Tom Taylor Injustice where everything was like
it does.
Okay.
It does. I feel like it's
Tim Seeley has
don't
that
see
same sort of
as much of that world. But what glimpses we do felt like solid, and it had a few tricks, a few little twists up its sleeve by the end of it. Anyway, this is I guess I don't want to say the exact premise, but they essentially people from the Injustice world need He-Man to come to their world to help them deal with Superman and some particular developments that have happened. The characters involved are fun. There's a good, very good ending to it. You know, it's a very perfect little pop comic.
It's better than it has any right to be.
Yes. The other comic that I'm not on yet, but is another one of those where like could have gone so wrong. Pop comics done right. This is like way back in the day. Bill Mantlow did like Micronauts and what was it? ROM and Larry Hama did G.I. Joe. And these are all guys who kind of took these toy properties that could have just been like the dreckiest comics ever, and they treated them sincerely.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is the same kind of thing Seeley is doing here. It's a of all things a toy video and video game comic crossover.
Yep.
And it's pretty fun.
Yeah. My pick is Rat Queens Special Neon Static, which is Rat Queens by way of Shadowrun. It's just a one shot. It has art by William Kirkby.
In the event people don't know, role playing games Shadowrun is cyberpunk stuff.
Everybody less than knows that.
I wouldn't assume.
I would not assume.
All right. the artist on this reminds me a little bit of sort of James Stocco, who has done a lot of Godzilla stuff like that. It's got a lot of nice background detail. The story transports the Rat Queens from their sort of D&D into this sort of D&D future with guns and magic. And
does it actually, like, did you actually see them brought from Fantasy Times into the future?
No. This is clearly just it is
established. An alternate rethink of them.
Yeah.
Got it.
And I want more of it. It's a great one-shot. It's all a story about, like, there's this phishing AI that is blackmailing people, and so they're, like, doing some hacking to try and find him. And so it mixes a little bit of that Matrix-y, you know, internet-y stuff that they always do in cyberpunk, mm-hmm. along with them fighting off dangerous security guards and a dragon that they fight with a mounted 50 caliber machine gun. The characters are all super fun, as always with Rat Queens. It's really fun, and nobody does cyberpunk comics. Nobody does Shadowrun comics. And for a long time, nobody was doing D&D comics, and then Rat Queens did this sort of like D&D as if the characters acted the way the players make them act.
Right.
So they're all foul mouthed. They're constantly there's like constant sex and violence and disrupting things, and they are definitely the coat that Hand of the Wizard is wearing on the front says "Murder Hobos." So they are adopting all the D&D
tropes of D&D. Yeah, yeah.
And
it is kind of funny that at a point where there's like not any sort of like, I feel like a lot of people doing cyberpunk comics right now are kind of doing serious harder sci-fi. They're using it to like kind of, you know, analyze the kind of deeper sci-fi ideas.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's not anything that's kind of a fun one that has that sort of heisty element built into that, or that kind of people will remember from books like Neuromancer and stuff like that.
This is a cyberpunk session. It is a game of people playing Shadowrun.
Yeah.
I feel like if Curtis Wiebe wanted to start up a side series,
he could
do this one very easily.
Well, I'm sure this is kind of a test balloon to some extent. I hope that he winds up doing more of it.
I hope so too. It made me want to go back and, because I fell off of Rat Queens a while back. I want to go back and catch up.
My backup pick is Tony Stark Iron Man number 2. I love the first issue, and I think the second issue is just as good. Dan Slott is doing the same thing he did on Spider-Man, which is he is bringing in some sort of obscure Marvel characters, but also heavily focusing on sort of his take on the main character. His Tony Stark is kind of this arrogant, he brought himself back from the dead, built himself a new body, and now he's just kind of using it to show off and being a little reckless. And Rhodey Rhodes, who he also gave a new body to, because Rhodey was like a cyborg and then he was dead, and I guess they brought him back too, which is great. Rhodey is dealing with all the post-traumatic stress of, you know, being killed by Thanos and being turned into a cyborg and burning in the suit, which goes back to the Bob Layton stuff. So this is Rhodey as his military attaché and his buddy, but also dealing with, like, not sure he wants to be War Machine anymore.
He should go to Tom King's superhero PTSD clinic.
No, it's considerably more fun than that. So this also deals with Jocasta being like the head of AI. They get into some real interesting notions about, like, they took Friday out of the armor and put her in her own body because Jocasta is like, AI should not be
shackled,
cooped up in the Iron Man suit.
Right,
that's
right.
That's unethical. She's the robot ethicist.
Like a human body?
No, it's a robot body.
Oh, okay.
So they do all that. They go into this tech deal where Sunset Bane, another classic Iron Man villain, is trying to sell his technology to the military. They bring in a character from Avengers Initiative they use really well.
Yeah, they do.
It's Iron Man and War Machine versus this tech threat. There's some stuff develops there. There's a Jocasta has a robot boyfriend who's revealed at the end. And
I like that Jocasta's in that mix. I haven't read this issue, but that was like a kind of lesser known supporting character, you know, that came out of weird, you know, Ultron stories, you know, weird, what did he have? What do you call the mother, or an Oedipal? There was all this weird Oedipal stuff with Ultron early on.
Oedipus.
And yeah. I'm just glad to see this kind of cool character rescued. She also, by the way, always had a cool design.
But this is, I mean, it's a good action issue. It's a good standalone issue. It deals with some Rhodey has a good through line. They're developing Tony Stark.
I mean,
going on with Jocasta. It is a solid superhero drama. This is like 80s superhero comic stuff for me again.
I like that it's not 100% focused on Tony.
Me too.
I like the diversity of it. It makes it feel like more of a. I don't know. It makes it feel more.
Would y'all say it bodes well for FF?
Very much so.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, this is great. I've been looking for a great Iron Man comic. I mean, honestly, since the movies,
right?
You know, 2008 Iron Man came out, and I wanted to read an Iron Man comic that I loved, and nobody's done that comic.
Right.
In 10 years, nobody's written the Iron Man I wanted, and Dan Slott's doing it.
Dan Slott.
And Valerio Schiti continues to do some of the strongest work I've ever seen.
Yeah, Dan Slott is just kind of killing it at Marvel lately, and he needs to stay off the internet.
Yes,
stay off the internet, and he can slowly but surely fix everything that Bendis broke.
Yes. completely agree.
Dave, what's your backup pick?
My backup pick is the first issue of the third Star Trek Next Generation Mirror Universe miniseries. Each one has led into the next. This one is called Star Trek Next Generation Terra Incognita. And it takes a character I actually kind of used to hate from Next Generation. The kind of very anxious, sort of lovable loser type guy, Barkley, the guy who was like, how did this guy ever pass the Starfleet entrance exams? But who ended up being kind of an interesting character. Who played him? Dwight Schultz?
Yoakam.
Yoakam. Oh, Dwight. Whoever the guy was who played Murdoch on...
Oh, that's right. I forgot it was him.
Yeah, you remember that?
Yeah, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, yeah. Very different types of characters, you know, from the kind of like... slightly cracked egg Vietnam vet in A-Team to a stammering, did I do that right? Kind of guy on Next Generation. Well, in the previous miniseries, the Mirror Universe Barkley, who's had to be particularly underhanded because he's not like a strong physical threat type of guy, and who, like, he's kind of in a way bookended the series. He, in the Free Comic Book Day special, we saw him assassinate somebody to stay in power or whatever on the in the Mirror Universe. Well, in the previous miniseries, essentially the good guys, the Prime Universe Star Trek Next Generation crew, were able to send their counterparts packing and thwart their scheme at the last moment. But Mirror Universe version of Barkley managed to stay on board.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is all about him sort of trying to figure out what he can do as a standalone kind of usurper in his world. First thing he does, take out regular Barkley and begin like kind of looking at his life, trying to act like him, trying to kind of, because he's like kind of this dangerous, assertive version of him. And I'm curious to see where it goes. And this is kind of, I think, ultimately where they went with the character on the show, is to show that here's this guy who dealt clearly with anxiety and other issues and who kind of found a way to rein it in and become like an effective crew member. Now, right now, it looks like Mirror Universe Barkley is a much more... he even taunts him with this. He's like, I'm better at being you than you ever were.
Yeah,
Which is an interesting idea, you know.
Dave, he hates Barkley as much as you hate Barkley.
Yeah, as much as I hated Barkley.
Oh.
But I like a lot of Next Generation stuff, I sort of warmed to some of the concepts over time. I actually, through that feminist Trek podcast, Women at Warp, which I hugely recommend, they did an episode where they talked about Barkley the whole episode, and it was super interesting. And I kind of found a renewed appreciation through their kind of way they kind of lensed him. And so what I'm hoping is that this is not like all about like kind of like crapping on his character. I don't think it will be. I think, but they're the, you know, the Mirror Barkley has an interesting scheme going on. There's stuff involving, another starship, and that the Enterprise is helping out, and he's trying to manipulate things to his end. He has run-ins with kind of all the big crew members, like Riker, Geordi, notably.
I love the reference to Spot.
So Data's cat, he's like prowling around Data's Data's room or whatever, and he's like, I need to get out of here fast before his like, you know, monstrous pet finds me. And then like the Spot of the Prime Universe that we know, his little cat comes out and he meows at him or whatever. So clearly there's an unsold tale about his hideous Mirror Universe counterpart. There's also a bit in there that I thought was a neat idea, because Mirror Universe Data was all kind of Borged up looking. He had like attachments and weapons and stuff like that, and he did, you know, he looked cool. But Wesley Crusher talks to Data and he's like, hey, you know, he's like, have you, you know, all those upgrades and stuff, he's like, have you ever considered that, Data? Which is kind of a logical question. If I was a kid, I'm like, yeah, why doesn't Data have more guns and stuff strapped to him? And Data says, and he's like, in fact, I have, but I've always decided against it. If I continually replace the components that make up my body, at what point will I no longer be me?
Yeah, and I'm like, that he considered it.
That sounded very Data. It kind of reminded you that, hey kids, maybe you don't want things to be like the Mirror Universe. It's horrible. Data is. Do you want Iron Giant Data, or do you want Data as a gun?
Right.
And I hope that that's actually where they're going with Barkley too, where, you know, the timid version of him will prove to be more of a threat than his mirror counterpart thinks. But right now, it's all it's all kind of like his ski build up and interesting backstory stuff. And a pretty successful opening run for Mirror Barkley. So,
I really like the art in there.
The art's good. This guy's clearly working from photo reference stuff and is doing a pretty good job of it, I think.
I was going to say, he's more on point than most of the people who are work from reference.
The previous miniseries had a different artist with each issue, and some of them I liked and some of them I didn't. And it led to a slightly uneven experience, even though the writing was always good.
So it is written by the same people as Scott and David.
Yeah, I'm going to, like, overall, I will recommend the whole trilogy. I'm sure this is going to be a strong outing, and I'm sure that the trilogy is going to be a really pretty awesome as a whole. But I'm glad this has gotten off to a strong artistic foot as well.
Yeah.
Nick?
I am going to pick The Life of Captain Marvel number one. Mm-hmm. I will say that I have...
Miniseries?
It is, I think, a six-issue miniseries, isn't it?
Yes, I believe that's right.
I will preface this by saying that I have not been a huge fan of the Margaret Stoll run of Captain Marvel books. I just have never connected with it. This one, however, it kind of hit in a good place for me.
Mm-hmm.
It is a superhero story, but it also diverges pretty quickly into a slice of life story as well. Which
it's billed as sort of the definitive origin for the character.
And it may be getting to that, but it's all sort of about her reconnecting with her family.
Mm-hmm.
She basically has like a panic attack during a big battle with Moonstone and kind of goes a little unhinged at a point where Tony has to stop her and kind of take her back and figure out what things wrong. She goes home to her summer home in Maine.
I'm just pretending, assuming by the way she wrenched somebody's head off.
Yes. Well, I mean, if it was a
Carol, easy.
If it was a Mark Miller book, that's exactly what would have happened, or Robert Kirkman. But then she goes to her summer home, her family's summer home in Maine, and sort of visits with her mother and her brother. And I don't know. It just felt the conversations felt very real and very natural. And I like
that. Are there flashbacks in it at all?
There are flashbacks to her as a kid, sort of with her father and sort of the relationship that they had, which is not a good one.
Right.
And honestly, I don't know a ton about Carol. My favorite Carol is from Claremont and X-Men. I mean, where she was binary and
right,
and
that's the time that I spent that's when I spent the most time with that character. I mostly remember her as the chick who hated Rogue for destroying her life.
Exactly. Beyond that, I mean, I know she was romantically involved with War Machine, and you know, dealt with that when he passed. I don't know if they're going to get to that since he's back.
I think relationships end with breakups or death in the Marvel Universe.
That's true.
It's like, oh, you're back. I'm seeing somebody else now. Sorry you died.
But I've been to Maine. This feels like Maine. Margaret Stoll gets the accents completely, which I thought was kind of fun. And also, the art in here is so good, and that's by Carlos Pacheco. I mean, it is some of his best work. It's kind of talky like a Bendis book. But there is definitely action. There's more going on. There's some events that happen, and there's threats on the horizon of new stuff. So I thought it was a very good start, and I'm curious to see how it continues on.
What else you got?
Other things in my stack, the second issue of Mark Miller's Magic Order, as more deaths occur and the world of the Magic Order is kind of expanded upon. We meet a few new characters, see some weapons, and it's all wonderfully illustrated by Olivia Copiel. Fourth issue of Justice League, as kind of the shit hits the fan, and the villains seem to have the leg up on the heroes.
You know what they should bring in to help them out? He-Man.
I mean, I think all problems can be solved by bringing in He-Man.
You got something needs punching?
The Thrilling Adventure Hour, which I don't know if you're familiar, if anyone's not familiar with that, is a podcast.
Still need to check that out at some point.
And it had a bunch of different skits, ranging from kind of pulp Buck Rogers to humorous things like this one, which is about a married couple who are the best ghost hunters there are. And they're always drunk. And they're always kind of the Nick and Nora playfulness.
Nick and Nora Ghostbusters?
Yeah, essentially Nick and Nora Ghostbusters. This is a good one. It's actually from Ben Knacker and Ben Blacker, who are the creators of it. If you're a fan of it, definitely check it out. Thor number 3, which is the return of Hela and sort of the fight for Muspelheim
is right.
Muspelheim as...
Gesundheit.
She and... And the Thor and the god of the fire giants, whatever her name is, Sindri, are kind of...
That's made up.
Well, yeah.
That's not Norse enough.
It's not Norse enough.
I'm hella pissed.
Oh, God. Okay, so moving on. That was a great Thor issue. Weatherman number two, the antics continue, and the sort of more stuff, more questions are asked and answered.
This is such a weird book, and I love it.
It is very bizarre. I love the art. I'm not quite sure where they're going with it.
I'm really liking they sort of reveal why he was taken at the end.
Yeah.
And there's some sort of Total Recall stuff going on.
Yep.
It's bonkers. But it is like more European stuff with the sci-fi.
Dog, and I was a little.
Yeah. Well, they really do want to show you the dog.
Yeah. So. It's kind of harsh. Cable number 159. Kind of a flashback, dealing with sort of Cable as a kid. With Scott Summers and Jean Grey. There's Hope Summers in here as well. It's just a good... If you love Cable, check this out. And then Avengers number 5, which has one of my favorite covers of Ghost Rider driving on the lake with Captain America in his car. I assume it's Must Go Faster homage for Jurassic Park.
Well, is that like a Celestial reaching out for them?
Yeah, they're dealing with a Celestial threat that Loki has brought upon New York. So, yeah.
Dave... What else you got?
Let's see. They're doing a kind of fun crossover of Archie and the Batman 66 era.
Right.
It's got a bunch of great covers from Mike Allred and some other people. Francesco Francavilla did a great one for it. I didn't get a chance to read it, but it looked like a lot of fun. I mean, these are two properties kind of, I think, that fit very well the kind of very... like lightweight kind of campy Archie and the lightweight campy Batman of the 60s. It just seems well like a good concept. I was flipping through it and I saw that it begins with a sequence that has Poison Ivy in it, and she's got like a sort of almost this Southern rogue type accent, which means I think that must have been how they conceived her for the, you know, in Batman 66.
Huh.
Anyway, it's one of those things where when I was reading it, I was like, that feels pretty right. Because I know they've done Harley Quinn and some of the other modern characters as written Batman 66 style. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Top Cow has their Aphrodite 9 series, and there's a new one called Aphrodite 5. I guess various generations of, like, artificial intelligence or something.
Aphrodite V.
Yes, but
that's what Grant Morrison would call it.
I haven't read it yet, but it looks like it is. It actually looks like it's a fairly more serious cyberpunk kind of thing itself, set in the near future. Everybody knows the Top Cow books had a healthy dose of TNA kind of backing them,
another scoop of TNA thrown on top of that healthy dose.
But not always, though, because like JMS did his serious superhero book,
right.
And they've every once in a while kind of extended a little bit beyond that, even accepting outside of that. Like Garth Ennis did The Darkness and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this one, the vibe I got was that they are kind of pushing things a little bit more with this one. So if you're looking for some cyberpunk, you might give it a shot. Last thing I wanted to mention was just Royal City, which is on issue 12. Some big stuff happens in this, and I was honestly a little confused by it because I the normal thing of each issue being self-contained is a little bit different in this one, and like, I don't know, like vaguely supernatural things were happening, and I was like, I feel like I need to reread the whole series. Yeah. It has two issues left to wrap up.
Okay.
It ends with issue 14. As always, there's an intro along with the soundtrack mix suggested for it in the back from what's his name, Jeff Lemire. There's some more thoughts about coming up on the end of it, and you know, him being sad about it, and also kind of, you know, the same thing he feels with other projects where it's like it's both liberating to be done, and yet he's going to miss the characters and all that. And he says some interesting things, but I think at this point I'm going to probably like, you know, read it all in one fell swoop when issue 14 hits, and. I'm looking forward to it. It was it always had good stuff in it, even if once or twice I was like, what is happening here?
You know, it's funny you mentioned the soundtrack thing. I forgot Weatherman has an original synthwave soundtrack that you can find at SoundCloud.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Which That's is cool. kind of cool.
That is cool.
All right. I'm going to Marvel whore out here for a minute.
Do it.
X-Men Red and X-Men Gold, both this week. Both are great. Immortal Hulk number 3 is an Artist Jam issue. So it is the reporter is looking into finding the Hulk. And this is a story about not the Hulk, but another gamma-enhanced boy called the Hotshot, the human ray gun. And so she talks to a cop, a bartender, an old lady, and a priest, and gets this sort of Rashomon-like vision of the Hulk intervening in a sort of a hostage situation. And it's really interesting. The different art is going to, unfortunately, I think, put a few people off, which I always hate early in a run. think everyone was probably digging what Ron Garney was doing, and this has some weird sort of indie-looking art. I really enjoyed it.
That means I want to look at it.
I really enjoyed it. You'll really enjoy it, but a lot of people are going to be put off by it.
Yeah.
But it closes with a really interesting character in the Marvel Universe, also Gamma-infected, and doing some stuff with him, and I'm curious how that's going to tie in. Yep. So I'm still very much digging the Immortal Hulk. Runaways number 11 is another great issue focusing on Gert, but it's also got, like, they're building a new body for Victor, and basically everything that's going on with all the different characters, and check in to see what happened to that character that Joss Whedon introduced.
Yep.
So Rainbow Rowell continues to write a Runaways that is for a very specific and small number of people, but I happen to be very much in that audience.
Yeah.
Hunt for Wolverine Claws of a Killer is Wolverine Bad Guys versus Zombies, and it's got some nice art, and it's pretty fun. Flavor number 3, now I'll go to my Image whoredom. Flavor number 3 is great. It has the first cook-off between the characters. I really like this book, and we're now at the point where I've read all these issues, so the next issue will be new to me because I haven't read that one yet. Skyward number 4 is more of that story about the gravity doesn't exist.
Yep.
Continues to be great. Beautiful artwork from Lee Garbett.
I think it just got announced that they're doing a movie of it.
Yeah, I can see that.
Although I hate to say, like, indie writers like sort of do the I'd love to see them on this superhero book, like that's the end all be all sort of thing.
Yeah.
And yet, I would like to see that Skyward artist on a Flash comic.
Oh, that'd be great.
Because that cover is like where she looks like she's kind of booking on it is awesome.
Yep. Analog number 4 is more sort of futuristic, non-text cyberpunk. And there's a big talk with a robot gorilla and a robot cat. I really like that. Very strange little book. Ninjak number 9 is more of Ninjak and his little team against a team of villains in post-apocalyptic Mexico, which is a thing that Valiant has.
That's awesome.
Gregory Graves is a Superman Lex Luthor deconstruction, basically, by Dan Harmon of Community and Rick and Morty. It's very dark and cynical, but it's interesting if you like that kind of thing. And then I want to mention, speaking of The Thing, Marvel 2-in-1, Fate of the Four, which collects the first few issues of that Thing Human Torch series that Nick and I have been all about, and it's glad to see finally a collection for that, right on the heels of Fantastic Four showing back up. That's it for us this week. We want to talk to you about Ant-Man and Wasp. We ran out of time. We're going to try to do it next week. And until that time,
Yo-Jo!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.